Beaming to you from the plastic microphone studios deep in the heart of Cajun country, this is Fave Five for Fans. I'm your host, Jamie Ray, and I'd like to thank you for joining us. We found a show that has been cobbled together for all of you out there into the podcast universe. Today's episode is a first for me. I've invited Mark C. Sino, you got to remember the C, back to the show, and then he invited someone to come along with him. I mean, okay, whatever, it's no big deal. He probably was traumatized by the non-Romero zombie episode where I, you know, put him to task. But he has brought along his co-writer, David C. Hayes. Hey, you guys both have C's in your names. You're like, yes. I'm sorry. Anyway, must be the cough medicine. Gentlemen, welcome to the Plastic Microphone Studios. The receptionist will validate your parking.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, you're very welcome. I mean, last time I know we didn't really have a lot of, you know, time to talk. So right. I definitely wanted to get together and do this. You actually came up with today's topic, which is Fave Five Found Footage Films. F-f-f-f-f-f for short.
Holy alliteration.
Right? Yes. So yes, I'm just getting over into some kind of sickness, so I may go mute for a little while. Anyway, Mark, when we started talking about this, you decided to, you asked me very nicely if you could bring David along, and I, of course, said yes. So why don't you tell us a little bit about why you wanted to do found footage, and then David, you could tell us a little bit about why you wanted to come along with it, too.
Yeah, excellent. So found footage films are some of my favorite genre of horror films. I just absolutely love being put into that first person view of the film. You feel like you're a part of it. I think the scares for me, all mine are, you know, favorite ones are going to be horror movies. I don't even think I'm aware of non-horror found footage films, but it really just puts you in this, you get the full scare. Like you are participating in it. I find that they are mostly cleverly done. I enjoy the twists, the turns. I just enjoy the whole setup of them. They're very fun movies for me to sit back and watch, especially in theater with audiences, because everybody just hangs on the tension that they bring.
Right, right. And Mark, Dave, how about you?
I love found footage films also for similar reasons, but also the idea that viewer as voyeur is flipping fascinating to me. And I also really enjoy the idea of how media can be manipulated and how it manipulates people. And this goes all the way back to like the Orson Welles War of the Worlds as a found footage-esque sort of radio presentation. I love epistolary things like Cannibal Fat Camp, of course. Dracula, one of my favorite novels, is essentially found document, epistolary style. So this appeals to me, and it feels more real. Even the most ham-handed ones with the most terrible acting feels like we're peeking into a world that we're not supposed to.
Right, right. I love that. Have you ever read Stoker's manuscript?
The original manuscript?
No, I'm sorry. There's a novel called Stoker's Manuscript.
Oh, no.
It's about someone who finds the first chapter and an epilogue, and you find out it's all true, and it takes place around, what was it, the 1888 World's Fair, and Nikolai Tesla's involved in it and all of this other stuff. It takes that whole first person found document to a whole nother level.
I love it.
And there weren't any pictures, but I still read the whole book.
word for word
slowly. But all right, well, that's great. And I love found footage just because you never know what you're going to get. Even some of the bad ones have fun stuff in them, have interesting ways to show it. And the fact that you have a huge budget, you know, you can right. literally do it with a camcorder or these days with an iPhone.
Yeah, I think it highlights the beauty of filmmaking, the creativity that these filmmakers need to put into these films when they don't have that multi-million dollar budget. And then I think because it feels so gritty, it ends up feeling more real. And then you're able to get lost. You're able to get lost in that movie better than a big budget horror movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, Also, you gave me the next topic we can do, Fave 5 coloring books. I'll bring David on for that one also.
Coloring book, that would be awesome.
I don't have a Fave 1 coloring book. I mean, wait.
Mine was the Star Trek one from the 70s.
I'd have to think back.
Paint Mr. Spock blue. That was always fun.
Could, if you wanted.
Well, great. Well, if you guys are ready, I say we go ahead and dive right in. Because I would love to hear what your honorable mentions. And I know, Mark, that you only have two honorable mentions. That's fantastic.
I have three, and I trimmed it down from eight because I just didn't want to do that to you. So I have three.
I figured we'd be short on time, so I have one. We'll meld together.
As a guest, I appreciate that. You know?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So some people don't. Yeah.
Quickly usurping Mark as preferred guest. That's my entire plan.
Oh, that ain't, it's not hard. I keep podcasters on their toes, man. That's what I do.
All right. Go ahead. We've got, you've got two honorable mentions. If you've never listened before, an honorable mention is, no, you have two. An honorable mention is something that just couldn't make the list of five, or for some reason it was so unique or so unforgettable that it has to be mentioned here. So, Mark, go ahead with your two honorable mentions.
Okay, so my honorable mention to my honorable mentions. The first one is going to be Cloverfield. I love Cloverfield. It's a big budget found footage film. Highly enjoyable in theaters. It really didn't spawn any decent sequels except for the one with John Goodman. I think it was 18 Cloverfield Lane. Or I think like for that, they took two movies and just slapped Cloverfield on it to make it seem like it fit in the universe. But that one at least was enjoyable. But Cloverfield is one. I think that's going to be a lot of people's favorite one. Maybe not us. I'm not sure. But I think the general audience, that movie is very much well loved. The second honorable mention is the movie Creep. It came out with Mark Duplass, who I have to give him a shout out. He went to the same high school as me. He's about 7 or 8 years older than me, but shout out to Jesuit in New Orleans. Again, another one where it's him and I think one other person where, you know, a person hires a guy to document his life because he claims he's dying of cancer. He wants to make a video for his family, but then you find out there's some serious, sinister intentions behind why he invited this person out to his cabin. It spawned a sequel, which was also really good. I'm hoping there's going to be another one. Just very effective filmmaking. And then my last one is Behind the Mask, Rise of Leslie Vernon, which I don't know. I'm kind of disappointed in myself that didn't make my Fave 5 because I saw that movie a few years ago and I love that movie. I mean, it takes place in a world where slashers, Jason, Freddy, they're real. Right. And this person idolizes them and he hires a crew to document him becoming the next great slasher.
Yeah.
It's a mockumentary style parody of the slasher films. Oh, but my goodness, with the humor and the gore and it is in the mask, it is done so incredibly well that I highly recommend that. So many people have not seen the movie, and I was one of them for a long time until I caught it streaming, and I watched it, and it was one of those where it was like, my God, how have I not seen this movie? How do I call myself a horror fan and have not seen this? It's wonderful. Those are my three honorable mentions.
That was like four.
Thank you.
Well, you had Creep 2 in there as well.
Thank you.
Well, that was
David, he always does this to me. He always does.
Oh, and also I wanted to say, like I told you yesterday, I'm not including any found footage zombie films in mine just because we did the zombie podcast. We talked about all the zombie films. So I'm not including any of those.
Okay. All right. Well, that's great. So, David, let's go over to your honorable mention.
My single honorable mention is Ruggiero Deodato's Cannibal Holocaust from 1980. And it's only an honorable mention because many people don't claim it's a found footage film, but it's at least in part a found footage film because they literally found the footage and screened the footage verbatim of the intrepid film students, documentarians, really essentially, you know, getting impaled. But, you know, that's, it's a thing that happened. A lot of people don't like it for the animal scenes.
Turtle.
The turtle.
Turtle.
Reports are they did eat the turtle. It was part of craft service. They just happened to shoot the part. So that is my honorable mention, mainly because, and I've only seen it a couple times. I have watched it multiple times without the turtle scene. You can get a version with the turtle scene out.
Okay.
Interesting. I was wondering if they offered a animal cruelty free version. Just the turtle.
About 11 minutes long.
They kill a poor little marsupial looking thing. I mean, they do all kinds of things that are unsettling.
It's the Italians in the late 70s, early 80s. They, you know, this is the, not Deodato, but like Fulci, like, you know, drugged a shark in what zombie? I mean, come on. So, but no one complains about the abuses to the indigenous tribe.
No, no, no. But that turtle.
That poor turtle.
And poor
and those other and those other people
and those people that we barely consider people. I
suppose.
But
we paid them. I mean, we gave them beads or something. You know,
we gave them the turtle.
We introduced diabetes to their culture. They owe us. So, that's my single honorable mention.
All right. Well, that's a great one. So my honorable mentions, two of them, because you know, it's two. First is Cloverfield. I agree with Mark on this one because it. I think it changed a lot of the ways the filmmaking was done after that part. I mean, up to this point, you had seen found footage films that were pretty much low budget or seemed to be low budget. But this one was really a big screen blockbuster, you know, world ending type movie. And I've talked about this movie before. I love the fact of the way that when you see the found footage, you're also kind of going off into the overriding of the tape where you've got the better times, the guy and the girl who were together before they broke up. And this movie spawned just so many different movies. 10 Cloverfield Lane, the sequel, which was really good. Not 18, Mark. I'm looking at you. The Cloverfield Paradox. Which I just didn't understand why they made that movie.
It pissed me off because I was watching the Super Bowl and I remember they advertised it in the middle of the Super Bowl and I went, oh my God, I have a clue. I was waiting for the game to end so I could get on Netflix and watch the new Cloverfield movie.
Yeah.
And it was not a Clover. I don't know what it was. It was some weird space movie that they tied into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the paradox. Duh.
Yeah, it was a paradox. See, that's why he's the smart one of the duo.
What a good movie. Never mind. I'm redoing my fave five.
And my other honorable mention is The Last Exorcism from 2010. I really enjoyed how this movie kind of, you know, pulls you in. Now, first off, it takes place in Baton Rouge. So right there, it gets points for us. But it's the whole thing of, you know, this guy has just been doing this and doing this and he knows it's fake and he just wants to expose his father. And you show up. And of course, the last one is a true exorcism. And there are some scenes in that movie that are just very, very disturbing. And I really enjoyed it. So The Last Exorcism from 2010.
Nice. So. All right. Well, great. That too.
Yeah, there have been. There
like,
maybe
like
two?
The next to last exorcism or whatever they've called it.
Yeah, and then the exorcism that was almost the last exorcism, but they added one more, which was, I thought, a really weird title. But
The Last Exorcism Paradox.
And we mean it this time.
For reals.
Well, all this right. is exciting. This is exciting because nobody's honorable mentions made my fave five. So
yeah, me either.
Awesome. All right. Well, Mark, why don't we go to your number five?
Okay, so my number five is a very recent movie that really just stuck with me and entertained the hell out of me, and it is 2022's Deadstream.
Yes. Yeah.
Live stream? More like Deadstream, huh?
Yep, yep.
For anybody listening, I winked at the camera. The main character, it takes place about a YouTuber who makes his YouTube show doing stunts and pranks and, you know, just pretty much a parody of all the all of these awful YouTubers out there. And one of his pranks goes too far. He ends up getting canceled. He lays low for a while, and then to make up for, I don't know, not so much make up for, but to maybe relaunch himself,
right,
he spends the night in a haunted house, and he live streams the entire encounter. And what it turns into is what I describe as Charlie Kelly from Always Sunny meets Evil Dead. the actor who plays the lead, I think it's Sean, he's funny, he's over the top. You really don't like him.
No.
He's a pretty despicable guy, but you're also in the end rooting for maybe his character arc to come full circle to where, okay, maybe he's learning his lesson. Yeah. The movie is funny, it's gory, it feels like a Sam Raimi film. And it also has really good, effective jump scares.
Yeah.
So,
and a great surprise, like when the rabid fan shows up.
Yes. Yes. And you're
expecting that. Yeah.
And you know by looking at her that something isn't right about her. Something's off, but it's just such a surprise. It was a great, it streamed on Shudder. And it was just a fun film to watch, and some of the most fun I've had recently watching a horror movie.
Yeah, that's a great pick. That's a great pick. Shudder's got some good stuff on it lately.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dave, how about your number five?
Number five. I chose 2007's The Poughkeepsie Tapes.
I'm literally in the last third of that movie right now.
That's where it falls apart, actually. But
so stop
but
now?
But it's... Don't say I love it. So I'm a big mockumentary fan. Half of my life, the other half of my life is I'm a forensic psychologist, working in prisons and criminal behavior and stuff. So this how true crime affects things, and the notion that someone can find hundreds of tapes from a serial killer who has, you know, documented all these things and gone untouched for this long, and all you have are the tapes, is just it's a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
John Eric Dowdle is the writer director. It would have been higher. The acting kind of throws you out. So the hard part about found footage is if there's a performance that's completely community theater, you suddenly realize that you're watching fiction. And so there's some rough moments there, but it's put together really well. And it's mimics an ID channel or Discovery Plus documentary so well that the vibe is right there with it. And you get the gravitas is, it could be real. So Poughkeepsie Tapes, 07.
Good one. That's a good one. Well, I'm going to jump to 2014's for my number five, The Taking of Deborah Logan.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. This one...
It's such a good one.
It really is. And especially the fact that it takes you in. So it's a documentary on a woman, Deborah Logan, who is suffering from Alzheimer's. And it's the first part of it brings you in and you really kind of get an understanding. You really feel for this woman because you can see the depths that she's this disease was pulling into her. And then the things start to take a turn and realizing it's not necessarily just a disease. There's also something else. So I don't want to say a lot about this because if you haven't seen it, I would definitely tell you to find it and watch it because it has a lot of twists and turns, and we all know the scene I'm talking about that blows you know in the recovery room or whatever it is, the hospital room.
I was thinking of a different scene. I was thinking of the scene where there's a resemblance to a snake eating something.
Oh yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah.
It's on Shudder and Tubi. I just looked it up.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Yes. So go out and find it and definitely watch that.
I need to do a rewatch. Yeah. That one got pruned off my 13 honorable mentions. That one was on there.
You have like an advent calendar of stuff of honorable mentions.
I do.
Don't tell him that. He's going to do that.
What a great idea.
He's got December 14th. Look at that twinkle in his eyes.
Jamie, we got our Christmas episode coming. Oops, all honorable mentions.
Oh.
Mark's fave 25.
Dave, 25 honorable mentions.
Good Lord. All right. Let's go to Mark. Let's go to your number four.
Number four, another relatively recent movie is 2020's Host. This one came out again on Shudder. It was a almost like a little treat during the pandemic when everybody was locked away inside that this movie came out. It is six friends are holding a seance via Zoom, and during the and they're actually doing it during the COVID lockdown, so it was very kind of, you know, topical for the time. Something goes wrong, the demon starts possessing all their houses and pretty much takes them all out, and it is done so entirely well. It is 57 minutes long. I found that to be so interesting because it is the it's almost the exact length you get with the free Zoom membership. it's only 57 minutes, and oh man, there was something really nice too about sitting down and watching a full movie that took less than an hour. It, you know, got me in, got me out. I was happy. I think it came about because the director did a short little film about, you know, possession, and then Shudder saw it and then contacted him and said, hey, can you make it a feature film? And they did. They shot it during, I mean, this came out in July. And I mean, we didn't go into lockdown really until the end of March. Right. So, I mean, less than 3 months, this movie was filmed and edited and sent out and ready to go. But it's a fantastic film. It had a lot of great jump scares. Something I personally love in found footage films are the jump scares.
Done right.
Yeah, done right. And I feel they do. They are done right because it made everybody really look at Zoom differently, because at the time, that's how everyone was working, yes, was on Zoom. So that is my number four, the movie Host.
Rob Savage is that director.
Yes, Rob Savage. That was his name.
He also came out with Dash Cam, which didn't make my list.
I like Dash Cam, though. I did watch that a while back, and that was another really fun one.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet, but I've seen it, you know, on the ads.
Mm-hmm.
Well, David, what have you seen for your favorite number four?
My number four is actually four movies in a series.
Of course it is. What was I thinking?
I'm gonna go very fast.
Finally had a guest that could follow the rules. And
this is a rule. They're all the same movie, though.
Number four, part one.
Hell House LLC from 2015.
Yes. Okay.
They won. And so part two, the Abaddon Hotel from 18, part three, Lake of Fire from 2019, and the wonderful origins, the Carmichael Manor from 2023. The initial haunt vibe is awesome. I love haunted attraction movies, and when you smash a haunted attraction movie with a found footage movie, you've got me. But most importantly, I only included all four of them because their level of myth building in this is like Star Wars extended universe-esque. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's so much tied in, and there's stuff in the third one that matches the first one, and the second one comes into the oh, it's wonderful.
Great.
It's wonderful. So yeah, Hell House LLC. Mockumentary, and loved them all.
Right. Well, that's great. Well, I have seen the first one, but I haven't seen the second
one is good. Origins is excellent. I highly recommend Origins. The third one I think is probably their weakest one, but they're still
true.
I mean, obviously the first one's great, and they're all worth seeing.
So David, we'll have to have you back on for your fave five Hell House LLC films.
When there's five. There's probably another one coming out.
So that would be good. And no, Mark, you're not invited. So my number four is going to be an obvious choice to anybody who likes found footage. And I am talking about Paranormal Activity from 2007, with a film budget of only $15,000 and with global box office receipts of $300 million. These guys set up for one of the most profitable movies of all times. Almost countless sequels. I don't know how many they've had, six or
seven.
Seven. Yeah.
You could do a fave five on them.
Yes, you could, with honorable mentions.
Only two though.
Yeah.
Right.
The way it's supposed to be, Mark.
Well, thank you, Paranormal Activity, for following the rules.
But it started off a great series of films, and I really enjoyed the first one because it set up this world that, yeah, there's some other things going, but you don't really have to explore the world that they create in the sequels to really enjoy the first one. Yes, it does expound on it and lets you know more and more, but in the end, you can just enjoy that movie for what it is. And it's set up with, you know, with cameras, with surveillance cameras in the house. And so they use a whole bunch of different views. And I just really, really enjoyed it. A lot of people out there must really enjoyed it. That is a movie that you definitely had to see in the theaters, like you were saying earlier, Mark, because that experience with the crowd was something else.
I agree. My favorite dispute I have on that one is the $15,000 budget.
Yeah.
So they came at the end. They came in. They had to reshoot the ending.
Right.
And the ending is this wonderfully put together, you know, from Amblin Entertainment. So like the reshot ending cost equally as much as the rest of the movie. And then they put millions into marketing with the most brilliant marketing campaign outside of one of my top five movies.
Mark, didn't you tell him about the T word?
I didn't tell him about the T word. I'm sorry. You're not allowed to say the T word. If you were to listen to Bay my five. Zombie.
Sorry, there we are.
Yeah, if you were to listen to my zombie podcast with Jamie, I say the T word about 37 times.
I made $13 off of him that episode.
I told Jamie, I was like, am I allowed to curse on this podcast? And he's like, I'd rather you not. And I said, that's fine. I don't have to curse. And then he was like, and then I started saying the T word so much that he was like, I almost wish you'd start cursing. It'd be less to bleep out. I'm like, man.
So I was ill-informed by someone.
You were not informed.
I'm sorry, David. I feel you.
I know. Like, what a weird thing for like the host to tell the guest the rules. Yeah, I think other guests should tell other guests the rules. And then, you know.
If they bring them on. I'm just saying.
Sorry. At this point, are you a guest? Or are you just like furniture? Like, you're an ottoman.
Sir, I'm a reoccurring guest. I'm about to become a series regular.
Reoccurring guest? That's, I mean, gastric problems reoccur. I mean, what is, I don't understand your role in all of this.
Okay. Oh, I love you, man.
Just because Jamie has to take stomach medicine after our shows.
Pepto-Marcals.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So before we dive into our number threes, though, I do want to talk real quickly about what you two guys do. So I'm a big, big fan of this book. This is so much fun. Cannibal Fat Camp. And then I know that you've also done the book's late night double feature where I'll let you guys explain to it. But I think this was a fascinating idea. And then we want to talk about at the end, we're going to talk about where people can find your books and all your other works. So, David, tell us a little bit about what you do in that field.
Sure. So I have been writing and authoring things for years now. And I started in the B-movie world. So written and produced and been in 100 or so, I don't know, a bunch of movies, all in the horror realm, all mediocre. So, you know, please feel free to find any of those you want. It's your funeral. But I met Mark in 2012. We got together and collaborated on Cannibal Fat Camp, which is absolutely amazing. I still work in the field from time to time. And then the other half of my life, like I mentioned, is in criminal psychology and cold case investigations and stuff like that.
That's very
David and cool. David and I bonded in the most Cannibal Fat Camp way in 2012 when we first met. It was in Salt Lake City. It was at a Stoker convention and for the annual Horror Writers Association. And we went to some, you know, it was some after party, it was something, I don't remember what it was, but we were sitting there, we were both hungry and there was no food. So everyone's sitting on these tables, just watching somebody talk about something. And then we ordered a pizza and like we were sitting there in the room, him and I are just eating pizza while everyone else is staring at us, wanting to know like, where'd they get that pizza from? And David and I are just eating pizza and having a grand old time. And I think that's when we knew that there was more to this. This friendship really blossomed.
Yes.
Cannibal Fat Camp came about. It was David's idea. He had pitched the idea of wanting to do a book entirely made out of like news articles and letters from camp. And I think, you know, it was a good idea. We kind of struggled with how to make that into a longer actual book. And then that's when, you know, we novelized portions of it while then having the letters from camp in there, the medical forms, just to give it some extra little, just make it different. And I guess almost make it that mockumentary style. We were making a found footage book before we really knew what we were doing. It's gone on to be incredibly recognizable, a lot due to that cover. But when people read the book, they some of the highest compliments I get is that, wow, there's a story in here that has emotion and heart, and it's not just gory, campy B-movie-ness. There's more to it.
There's also spleen and kidney and...
Right. There's other body parts as well.
Pulled Leon, yeah. Right. Shout out to Josh Werner, though. He's the cover artist.
Oh, wow.
And he killed it. That's Josh Werner.
Yeah, it is fantastic. And I know that you're working on a sequel that is...
It's slowly in the works. Yes. Slowly in the works.
Working is a strong word.
So there's a new edition coming back out, right? Where you're going to hardcover this and...
Yeah. So I'm getting it completely reformatted. The medical forms are going to look like medical forms. The letters from home are going to look like handwriting. Oh. It's going to look like the book always should have looked like. And really at these shows, I've been getting so many requests for, can you make it a hardcover? Mm-hmm. And sure, why not? So mm-hmm. It'll come out in hardcover paperback, the stickers coming out. There's a lot of things going on with this book and just the fandom from doing conventions that it's generated. People love it.
David, are you working on a script for it?
I have been told by multiple filmmakers that after reading it, that it's unfilmable.
No.
We'd have to raise the age.
Yeah.
The characters. And so it's rude. I don't know. I mean, pardon me. I mean, I've experienced my stuff being shot before and sometimes turning out great. Like Joe Bob Briggs showing Rotten Tail last weekend.
That's right. Big shout out.
Sometimes it turns out not so good, like literally all the others. So
the other 99 movies he's credited
with. But you can hold on to that one, you know.
It's that one. But you know, I'm more than happy to if someone's interested, give it a shot. I would want to do it right though. It's kind of like, you know, Mark and I had a little baby, little bastard son.
Never mind. True.
The conception part was just raising our cholesterol levels with pizza. That's all what we did.
Right. It's we were just fortunate in 2012. Our paths just crossed and we just had the right personalities that we hit it off immediately, and it allowed us to collaborate on some really fun things. And Cannibal Fat Camp is one that just has stood the test of time as far as popularity and demand goes. And I am going to work more on a sequel. I really do. I think David, actually, we worked on the outline. We mm-hmm. have a great outline that makes sense and goes with that. That really expands the story. That will be something that will be worked on soon.
Well, all kidding aside, I cannot wait for the sequel. I've already read this book twice and I just love the Lord of the Flies, you know, feel that it has to it, along with some of the other elements that I won't give away. So can people buy this copy online from October Nights Press?
No. As of right now, I took it down because I really want the new edition to come out, which I'll be getting all of that organized within the next day, sending it off to the formatter. I'm really hoping it'll be done within a month. I've stopped selling it at shows because I just don't want the old version out there anymore. Because, David and I wrote this now, it's 2012, 13, 14 years ago, probably. I mean, we've improved as authors. I have. I don't know about him, but.
Not a bit.
I wanted to elevate it more to the level where we're at now than what it was 14 years ago.
Yeah, I could see the formats and the changes that you're talking about making it better, but I don't know how the story could be better. It's
the story really doesn't change. The story doesn't really change much. The core of the story stays the same, but there are better ways to maybe write certain things. But the story itself doesn't change.
Awesome.
I use bigger words.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that. Why don't we get back into our lists? And I believe we are both now, we're all now at our number three.
So number three for me is 2011's Brave Encounters.
Brave Encounters. That's not even on my radar.
Wow. Brave Encounters would be Grave. Described. Oh, Brave. Sorry. Is that one on your radar?
No. Yes. Yes.
Gravy Encounters is on mine.
Grave. Yeah. Right.
And the sequel, Biscuits and Gravy. That's awesome.
Oh, so good.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It's the cold medicine.
Well, Grave Encounters to me is like horror comfort food. It is, it really came about during that era of all the ghost hunting and paranormal shows when those were dominating television and you had so many of them. It's a great parody of Ghost Adventures with, you know, Zach Bagans being the lead in that show. And the lead of this movie is similar, but pretty much a ghost hunting crew goes inside a mental hospital and they discover that the building is legitimately haunted and won't let them leave. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a paranormal reality television parody that's done right. The crew is so cynical. They don't really, in the beginning, it shows that they're staging things, that everything's pretty much been a hoax. And yeah. then it starts getting real. And the host of the show, who was, I guess, the main cynic, is now getting excited again because, you know, it's this is real. Let's capture everything while the rest of his crew is freaking out. And the difference between this one and also other found footage films is that other films are way more subtle in their scares. You know, the door slam or the something move in the background. And this one is just in your face. Here's the ghost. And they are coming right at you the entire time. It's a fun ride. The sequel was not good. I think the sequel really pissed a lot of people off because I think it was one of those sequels where it made the first film fake. Oh. Where they were like, oh, actually, Grave Encounters was a movie we shot. And now Grave Encounters 2 is real. And then there was like, why would y'all do that? But so a lot of people, they don't even consider Grave Encounters 2 relevant. But Grave Encounters, that movie for me is such a fun movie. I love the setting. I love the abandoned mental hospital. It's completely freaky.
And, isn't there something with a bathtub where there's a ghost in it? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
Maybe so.
Big rehabilitation tubs.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Probably so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's woof.
So that is my number three.
That's a great one. I
think that was part of that After Dark Horror Fest that came out. Like, or was it 8 Films to Die For?
They did that
every year.
Yeah. They used to do that every year. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that was part of it. I think that was one of those.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That was a good one.
All right.
So my number three comes to us from the 20th century. So no. 1998, The Last Broadcast. Yes. And Last Broadcast, directed by Avalos and Wyler, tells the tale of people in the Jersey woods looking for the Jersey Devil. And this is a lot of fun. It's early found footage, like early video age found footage. And there's a really cool cryptid vibe with it. They work for a public access channel, of course, and they're hunting for the Jersey Devil via their public access channel. The scuttlebutt on this is that the directors of Blair Witch were part of it and wow. delayed the final edit of this long enough for Blair Witch to premiere.
Wow.
But there was a court case involved and it's sealed, so no one knows for sure. But the artisan ended up paying the producers of The Last Broadcast quite a bit of money. But interestingly, this was like one of, if not the first, digitally theatrically shown films. Mm-hmm. So it was broadcast to a bunch of different theaters in a premiere at one time. Wow. Yeah. So Last Broadcast, 1998, and if you're into the cryptid hunts and public access television, much like I am, yes. then I say check it out.
All right. I've never seen that one, so I'm typing it into IMDb now so I can remember it, and I will hunt that one down.
I've heard it was very good, but it's also very rough, and which by design,
right? It looks like it's on Tubi. So
it's rough by design. Also, it's, you know, they're utilizing the public access stuff. So they're shooting on Betacam, and they're shooting, you know, like my first feature that I worked on, we shot on Betacam with stolen beta tapes from the news station that was throwing them out.
Wow. That's awesome.
But it's also on Shudder. So,
Okay. I think that's where I saw it, because I love my Shudder. I would get rid of a lot of other streaming services before I got rid of Shudder.
Shudder just stepped their game up within the last like several years. It just, you know, they came out strong, they kind of floundered a bit, and then they started getting all these exclusives, and that's where they took off. That movie, what's that? That movie that just came out, the talk show devil movie.
Oh yeah. Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, Late Night with the Devil. That's streaming, I think, in like 2 or 3 days on there. Yeah. So I mean, they do a great job.
I'm actually working on Shudder original films. So there have been some really great movies there.
Can I do that one? Can I do that show, please? I'm calling it here on the show. Did you promise it to
someone? David, do you want to do it instead? I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, Mark's, you know, if it's going to push Mark out of a job, I'll love to do it.
All right, Mark, I'll put your name on it.
Excellent. I'm going to get David. I'm going to add another guest, and I'm going to have Mark's Fave 5 guest on the show.
Come on. You and I both know you don't have four friends. So just stop. Okay. Yeah, you can certainly do it. And David, if you want to come on, you can do it too. No joke.
Yeah. You know, second banana to Mark Sino. Jesus.
That's pretty low. I'm sorry.
How terrible is my life gone at this point?
You made a lot of mistakes, and I'm that constant reminder.
Oof.
Oof. Okay, so if we go to my number three, it is the first major crossover, because you named this, David, earlier, Cannibal Holocaust from 1980. Mm-hmm. I think this is definitely one of the most controversial films ever made. The story that I love to tell is that the director, he signed into the contract for all of the actors who were the student film people, that they had to go into hiding and could not be seen out in public for a period, I think, of 3 months is what it was supposed to be. But then after the movie, like you said, was found and released, they thought they had all been killed. So an Italian judge put out an order that Diodato had to produce the actors. Nice. Or they would start a criminal investigation into possible murder charges. And of course, they brought them all. So it was a big spectacle. So, I mean, it raised even, you know, more hype and everything about the movie. But that's how, if you've never seen it, that's how real that movie looks. It is something else.
It's brutal.
Imagine if one of those actors had like accidentally passed away in between that time.
Yeah.
It was the 70s.
Yeah,
it could have happened.
Right. And the director, he passed away only like 2 years ago. That was a movie my friends and I, we rented it in college because we finally heard so much about it that we had to finally sit down and watch it. I think we went to Blockbuster Video, which was down the street, and got a copy of it, and we watched it, and we were just it's not scary, it's just disturbing. And it was one of those movies that's there's movies that I'll watch that I consider one and dones. Mm-hmm. And Cannibal Holocaust is one where I'm glad I watched it, but I know I won't watch it again just because it's just, that was enough for me.
Yeah. Okay. And I could see that. All right. Well, Mark, why don't you give us your number two? Penultimate choice.
Number two is one that we've already discussed, and it's
number two.
I'm the number two of this podcast. Number two for me is 2007's Paranormal Activity, which I kind of consider it the millennial Blair Witch. It is, I think it did for that generation what Blair Witch did for the previous generation.
Yeah.
That movie just scared the hell out of me. It is, I'm not going to go into the things we've already kind of discussed about it, but it is just simple, subtle horror that is done so masterfully. The you know, watching it in theater, a packed theater at the time when going to see movies was at its peak. The theater was completely filled. And when, you know, you'd watch the movie, the daytime scenes or advance the story. But when the nighttime scene starts, I mean, you could hear a pin drop in that theater.
Yeah.
There's little subtle things like the door constantly being open to the bedroom, and you're looking down that hallway, expecting there to be something just standing there watching the entire time. The movie just really fills you with dread. And it ramps it up. Katie and Mika are the couple. You know, Mika does what everyone says you're not supposed to do. He antagonizes the demon. He doesn't believe Katie. He thinks she's being ridiculous. He goes and buys a Ouija board. He goes and does things that just antagonize this demon more and more and more. And I think that's also what makes it a little scarier, is that it's not a ghost, it's a demon.
Yeah.
So even when it's said, like, hey, why don't you just leave the house? Well, the demon is attached to you, so it doesn't matter. It's going to follow you wherever you go. I think one of my favorite parts of the movie was when the psychic comes, and I think he gets the presence of what's there, and he just nopes out.
Yep.
He's just like, no. He's like, no, nope, I'm out of here. The scene at the end, you know, when he flies toward the camera, the whole theater jumped. And I remember coming home and genuinely being, I was walking past, we have French doors in the house, and I was genuinely weirded out walking past these French doors, looking out into the darkness. It's a wonderful movie. It spanned about, like seven sequels. And I would say probably five of those sequels I would consider solid.
Yeah.
The second one, of course, is very good. It just continues the story. We talk about Hell House with the world building, but Paranormal Activity is, it's like the Marvel movies almost. It is just expanding, expanding, expanding. And so number two for me is Paranormal Activity. That is one of the greats.
That's a great choice. Great choice.
Good call.
All right.
For my number two, I'm going back to the 20th century and the early 90s. So 1992's Ghost Watch. This was a BBC television show. So much like War of the Worlds, it was purported to the audience that we are going to see a live paranormal hunt, essentially. And Ghost Watch was like, you know, a progenitor of the ghost adventures and whatever haunted shows you have. But what they didn't tell the audience, much like Orson Welles didn't tell his audience, really, is that this is completely fiction. And as the haunting starts to take place, there's a phone bank in the studio, and the phone banks start to light up, and people around the country are experiencing similar things as what's happening on television. And people are freaking the F out. They're like, it's real life. People are freaking out as they're watching this. So British friends of mine have told me that this was the most terrifying thing that they have ever seen. You could equate it in the US to maybe if you were old enough watching The Day After. So that nuclear Armageddon miniseries, just being freaked out afterwards, except this was real-time freak out as someone's watching television thinking that their entire neighborhood is haunted. Larry Manning was the director, excellent, excellent, excellent writer of all things. Stephen Volk put this together. And again, it's on Shudder, it's on Tubi. It was unavailable for decades.
You know why? Recently,
there's a resurgence.
You know why it was banned for a long time? It's because they got an estimated over 1 million phone calls after that thing showed. And the BBC was slapped with, I don't know, I guess their version of an injunction. And they said they did not have nearly enough warning that it was fake. And that's why it's been pulled for a long time. I first heard about it just maybe 6 years ago. And there is now a Ghost Watch, it's called Behind the Curtains, that came out in 2013, that actually delves into everything. And I love the fact that if anybody's a Red Dwarf fan, that Charles Craig is one of the on-scene guys there. But no, that is an excellent choice, sir. Very good.
Thank you. I haven't seen that one. I've seen it advertised on. I think it's what you said. I've seen it advertised recently on Shudder, and I think the cover is very the movie cover is very I don't know. It's just like four people sitting around.
It's
staring 90s at the camera.
TV.
It looks like a courtroom drama.
It's so British. It's so British. Incredibly British.
I haven't stopped to watch it, but I can say after this, I will. That'll be the first movie I watch.
There Anyone that watches this, though, grain of salt. 1990s, early 1990s, things that were effective then, technological wise, are not as effective now. But the intent and you know, a million phone calls from an island. Come on,
yeah,
had to be do something right.
Yeah, and it is really, really worth watching. You have to remember too, it was on TV, so you didn't see all of the blood and all that stuff too, and it was very effective. So yeah, Mark, if you haven't seen it, definitely check that out.
I will.
All right. Well, I would also tell you that I'm going to go ahead and know my number two that I'm for sure is not on your list, Mark, and it is from 2007, Wreck, the Spanish version of Record, co-directors Paco Plaza and the other guy.
What's his name?
Balaguer. Some Spanish dude.
Yeah, it's Spanish. The incredible story of a reporter and her cameraman doing a show. I think it's called Madrid at Night, where they follow people who work at night and go through it. So they're doing a group of firefighters who are also like EMS, and they have to go to a building because of a case of somebody who, an old lady who might be hurting herself, and just goes into so much more. Talk about a world building. I think there's been three sequels for a total of four movies. Mm-hmm. And I just, some of the other ones may not be crowd favorites, but I love all of them. Even the last one that's set on a ship, because they keep the world alive and keep expanding it, though it's still around the same period. So it's like you're seeing stuff from other sides. But that first movie I watched, I'll tell people, I got a copy of the Spanish version of it before it was released here in the U.S. And I had one of those little 6-inch DVD players and sat in the bed in complete darkness with headphones and watched it. And it literally creeped me the hell out. So I love that. David, you've seen this one, I'm sure, huh?
I have. What do you think of the remake, or the American remake, Quarantine?
I love the remake.
I will say, as far as remakes go, it was very well done. I love, what's her name? Jennifer Carpenter from Dexter. She is amazing. I do feel that the ending, not to spoil it or give anything away, but the ending that the Americans chose took something away from the way that the story goes, because, you know, you've got what people normally think of the zombies, and then you've got the Spanish twist at the end where the Americans didn't really follow that. So I thought it was kind of lacking, but I understand you had to do it because you didn't want to just do a shot for shot remake Psycho and have it just be. What did you think?
I liked it. You know, and it's, you know, you go back, the Quarantine director is Dowdle, from my other pick, the Poughkeepsie Tapes. So, you know,
wow,
so
he approved.
Yeah. So he took the Spanish, I love Wreck. I love Quarantine. They're different movies though.
They are. And that whole end, that last, maybe not even 10 minutes, just changes the whole feel to it, but not necessarily in a bad way. I just think the Spanish version made it more unique than regular horror.
Yes.
Regular zombie films.
I haven't seen the Quarantine sequel, though. I may check that out.
Yeah. Don't pay for it.
That was in 2020.
Yeah. It made like a, it was airport. It was in an airport.
Yeah. That's right. I think I did see it. And I think it was okay. But again, just not.
It's okay. But
just not like the other one. Yeah.
No. The whole thing with the government and the quarantine and the building and all that stuff, it's just an amazing movie. But anyway,
yeah.
Okay, gentlemen, we are now onto our favorite five found footage films. Mark, give us yours.
One could say we're at the top of the list. Now,
you do have my PayPal account, right? Because
I'll send you. That was worth it. My number one has already been mentioned. It is Hell House LLC. It is one of the only recent horror movies I watched that legitimately scared me.
Really?
And I don't know why, because on the second rewatch, it didn't have that same effect. But there was something about my wife, I think, was out of town for work. And I watched it on, I think it was on Amazon Prime. And I think I just stumbled upon it. It's one of those great moments where you just find a film.
Yeah.
You read what it's about. And you say, okay, I dig all of that. It's a documentary style found footage film about a tragedy at a haunted attraction. Kind of like David said, if it sets in a haunted house attraction, I'm in.
Yeah.
I love haunted house attractions. I love any movie really that has to do with them. I just love it. I love how the house becomes its own character.
Mm-hmm.
And also it just so lends itself well to scares when you have already the props in place. And I watched it that night by myself, and I swear there was something about that movie that just unnerved me. I had trouble sleeping, and I went, holy crap. I'm like, that is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It was so effective. And I think it was those scary clowns. Hell House LLC has the scariest clown probably in the game.
More than Pennywise.
That clown is unsettling.
More than the Terrifier.
Yeah, Terrifier's fun.
More than Clown House.
Oh, strong words.
It's just, for me, it is, and it's done its use so effectively in how that clown is placed around in that house, how it pops up. Something about how things just, they don't move. It's like you see something now standing there, unmoving and staring at you. It's just, the cast have great chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, he's like the leader of the crew. He's the one that's pushing this thing to be a financial success. It's just low budget horror that's just done so effectively well.
Yeah.
And then it it's now gone on to do several sequels, which three total sequels and two of them being really solid movies. I don't know if you've seen Origins, the one that came out last year, but it's very good. I do a top 10 horror movies every year. I think it made my number three, but it was very good. Number one for me is Hell House LLC. I will always have a special place for that movie. You would think they'd have been tipped off when the hotel was the Abaddon Hotel. I mean, Abaddon is like the portal to hell in the Bible. So like, but hey, that's what makes these movies fun.
That's it.
America.
You know, I think one of the things, because I've only seen the first one, but I think one of the things is that you see, like you're talking about the clowns, but in the haunted house attraction, you know that all of these things are fake. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you know they're supposed to scare you, but they're not scary because they're fake. And then when they do become whatever you want to call it, possessed or used, you know, whatever, that's where you're like, okay, I can't even trust this now.
And I'm also a sucker. I'm a sucker for like a movie where it's like, it's all done documentary style. They're reporting on what happened. You're getting to it. And then they're like, okay, here's the tape of what happened that night. And now you watch it and you're just like, wow. And then it had a great ending. I've recommended that movie to everybody when they ask, hey, what's a scary movie I can watch? And I always will say Hell House LLC.
Wow. Awesome. Great choice. All right, Mr. David, how about you, sir? What's your favorite?
I debated about my number one being a Gen Xer. And although the wonderful marketing of the Blair Witch Project in the late 90s is nostalgic, I am going to go with my shot on video roots from some very clever filmmaking from 2002, The Collingswood Story. The Collingswood Story, it's not the greatest movie ever made, but for 2002 and what it was trying to do and the themes that have been later built upon it is excellent. Essentially, it's an early internet video calling haunted found footage film where a girl moves to Collingswood to go to college, and she video calls back and forth, rudimentary video calling her boyfriend back home. And as her apartment gets more and more haunted and things are happening, it worries the boyfriend some more. And so eventually we get to a point where they contact an online psychic. There's a three-way, there's video calls happening. And it's for anyone born as a millennial or Gen Z, it probably won't be as effective, because we're still stuck with that modem sound and the phone dropping our internet, and the way we communicate is going on differently. But it was really effective, directed by Michael Costanza, who didn't do much afterwards, but really, you know, as a shot on video pioneering sort of a found footage film, I'm going with The Collingswood Story.
So this is not one that's on my radar either.
I've never even heard of that movie. I'm Googling that one now to add to my watch list.
So let me ask you this. Is this the one where the girlfriend ends up waking up and she has like scars? And
yes.
Yeah. Okay. I have seen that one. That one is a good story.
It's not the best made, but for 2002, it was way ahead of its time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great pick. That is a great pick. Okay. And before we get to my number one, I just kind of wanted to give a little breakdown here to know, do you guys know what the actual first found footage movie is? You ever heard of this? It's from 1961. It's called The Connection. And it was directed by someone named Shirley Clark. The movie's presented as footage edited together from an attempt to make a documentary about drug addicts waiting for their next fix. And basically the director, the woman, Shirley, ends up getting involved into it. And the in-movie director, who's played by William Redfield, is eventually sucked into the world of drugs he's trying to document. And it's just, I've never seen it, but I thought 1961, that's pretty awesome. I mean, that's been going around for quite a long time. But my number one comes from 2010, and I love this film. It is called Trollzergerin, or in the Americanized version, The Troll Hunter. Have y'all both seen this? I could see from the smiles, yeah. You at least know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love this film because just like the first quarter of the movie, they're following around with the guy and he's telling them, you know, and then finally it's like, you know what? Screw this. I'm done working for them. Come on, you want to see what's really going on? And they bring the camera crew out there, and there are real honest-to-God trolls. And it was a top-secret government agency that's been trying to keep the trolls in their different sections, and all of that's starting to break around. And the thing for me was just that, oh, my God. I mean, this was such a unique story that I didn't even see this coming. I had just seen that it was on, I think it was Amazon at the time, and I love, you know, Norwegian-style films, and I was just like, okay, let me watch it. Oh, man, I love that movie. You know, based on several Scandinavian folklores, all the different kinds of trolls. And it's just a fantastic movie. And yeah, you might say it goes into the realm of horror, but I think it's more maybe a fantasy type drama.
Urban fantasy.
Yeah, urban fantasy. But absolutely loved it as 2010's Troll Hunter.
There's so many good found footage movies. I think I told you when I sat down, when we agreed to do the topic, I was like, okay, this won't be hard. And then I
was told that's what we were doing. You mean?
Well, right. Well, yeah. When I told you what we were doing, like any guest does to a podcast host, I'm like, do you know who I am? My friend David was on Joe Bob Briggs. You better do it.
Not at the time, but whatever.
Not at the time, but I had a feeling he would be.
He would be.
That was me just dropping names at that point. But no, I always before, you know, since this show and then the zombie show, I go online, I Google, you know, give me your best zombie movies, give me your best found footage movies. And I just start writing them all down. I swear, I got to like 20, 25 movies that I'm like, oh, I like that one. I like that one. Maybe I'm just a found footage genre fan as well. Yeah. I know some people don't really like it as much as maybe I do, but there are so many great movies. There's movies we didn't discuss. There's movies I haven't seen before. I knew bringing David on was going to be great because he was going to recommend movies that I probably knew I hadn't seen. So I've got three new movies to watch.
Awesome.
After this show.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, thank you guys so much for coming on. We're going to get all of your socials and your links. I know that you can find out more about David at davidchayes.com or mm-hmm. hayescriminology.com. And right. your books are available at splattertheater.com.
Yep. And with that's Amazon and October Nights and all kinds of stuff too.
Okay. Okay. And so what about Ouija's Slumber Party? When's that going to be coming out?
That goes into production January, I think. So okay. Ron Bonk at SRS Cinema is shooting that based off the script by me and Ed Lee.
And where are they going to shoot that?
Who knows? Not nowhere near me. I don't
know. I'm just saying, I might be available if they, you know, needed a bald, fat pizza delivery guy or something.
So the director is Bobby Canopy. So I think he's in the North Carolina area. I'll find out.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, this is definitely a face you need to see more of on screen.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Doing a Zoom call is smart.
We can get the Rot and Dial P for Peanuts also from Splatter Theater.
Dial P for Peanuts is out of print. The only way to get that is, I believe, secondary, like eBay or something. But the Rot is totally on splattertheater.com.
Cool. Cool. That's great. And Mark, of course, we can always find your stuff at HalloweenNightsPress.com. Halloween Press.
That's it.
Those three words put together, Halloween.
Right. It's October Nights Press.
See, that's exactly what I said.
But, you know, similar.
I'm doing lots of shows. I'll be appearing at some more shows in Louisiana this year. I'm going to be doing a show in Arkansas as well. I'll be doing a show in Missouri and one in Georgia.
Missouri. So, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be it's called AuthorCon. It's just some big giant author convention. And I had a friend who reached out to me and she said she had a table. Asked if I'd go in, if I wanted to split it with her. I said, sure, why not? Awesome. And then in Savannah, I was invited to it's called Preserve Halloween Con.
Oh, yeah, that's a great con.
So that feels, you know, right on my brand. So, yeah, we'll be doing that. I've got some new projects in the works. I announced the anthology, Mafia Horror Anthology, Gabagool, which is we are so far getting a lot of great submissions. Awesome. reading those right now. The new edition of Cannibal Fat Camp will be coming out. I'm going to be pestering David ever since he dropped that. David's the kind of guy, he just doesn't say anything and then he'll make a post saying, oh, and by the way, you know, I'm getting a movie made, you know, just oh, by the way, it's just nothing, and then movie. And I'm like, man,
maybe, you gotta read everything, maybe, is what you're saying.
Maybe that's David works, and I need though. To Maybe David and I need to have a talk about how can we make Cannibal Fat Camp an appropriate movie, you know, for some of these bigwigs that he's rubbing shoulders with.
The bigwigs over at SRS Cinema, yeah. I think the first thing we should do is probably see how much Jamie's going to put in the budget, and then we'll go from there.
Dollars, and you can take it to the bank.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I could probably get a court of law to say that was right around 40 million, whatever was just blanked out there as a verbal, you know, contract.
You have to get a lip reader to, you know, so
that's okay. I work in the criminal world.
There you go.
I'll find anyone to tell me anything I want.
Right.
David, you ever been to the Body Farm?
I have not.
Oh, okay. That's right.
I'm a civilian, so I'm not generally allowed in most places.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But,
you know the Body Farm, right, Mark?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen pictures of it and all that. It's pretty it's interesting. Yeah. I feel like that'd be a great location for a theme for a film, found footage film.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think they did a Bones episode where they find a body on the Body Farm, but it's not one of the ones and they have to figure out
supposed to be there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Where'd this come from?
I knew
They're breeding in captivity now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been working on the new anthology project, which will be a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun doing these anthology projects. And the one I did based on the band Ghost, unlike many anthologies, actually turned out to be financially successful. So I do have hope for this one as well. And I've got a couple new books coming out this year, probably more toward the end of the year. So I'll have some new material on the table soon.
Awesome. Okay, we're looking forward to it. And again, we'll have all these links at the end. You guys can go and find all of their good stuff. And then watch for us. We're going to come back and do our Fave 5. I wrote it down. Oh, Shudder Films. So check it out. And there's a bunch of them on DVD, too. Did you know that?
Yeah,
I got to do. Don't forget, you got me down for Fave 5 horror remakes as well.
I've got that already worked. You know,
okay,
it is.
So wait, I need to ask a question.
3 pages.
Definition between remakes and reimagining. So if something is being made from the same source material, like written source material, it can't be counted as a remake of a film. Like The New Crow, not a remake of The Crow.
Yeah, it would be a remake
from the same source material. Okay, just checking. Because people get all wiggy and confused about this.
Did you know
I'm adamant.
There's a whole subgroup out there of people who don't believe that kaiju monsters are kaiju unless they're in the Toho Godzilla films. So
that's intense.
Crazy, you know, crazy. Anyway, yes, that's been one of my things. Jay Hall, he's maybe watching this. Okay, well, great. Well,
called out, found the one dude. Like, yeah, you.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Jerk.
There's some people, and it's this person.
No, this person is the one who told me about it, and I've just not been able to let it go since then. I'm like, what? How could you? You know, okay, I'm just going to go off of a book here. But anyway, it has been a great time, guys. I really appreciate you both making some time to do this, and we'll look forward to our next one and finding everything on the web and all your socials at the end. And I'd also like to thank all of you out there in the podcast universe for joining us for this episode of Fave 5 from Fans. You can find us and more from the Plastic Microphone Studios wherever you catch your podcasts. You can find us on X and on Facebook and on Instagram and most of the socials. I don't do any dancing videos on TikTok, but if it gets me more listeners, I'm not opposed to it. And if you like the show, consider telling someone about it. And if you don't like the show, consider telling someone you don't like. Maybe it'll ruin their day. And remember, folks, it may not be the best. It may not be the most popular. But if it's your favorite, then it's good enough for us. Thanks for joining us. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you for having me. And Mark, I guess.
I guess.